Welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Arizona Boomer Radio gives voice to 1.4 million boomers throughout the Grand Canyon State and beyond. Each show has a different guest and a different topic. We hope you enjoy the relaxed, conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now here are the hosts of the show, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
And indeed, welcome to Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe. Again, we have no Babe with us today. She is working on many of the changes that we're undertaking as far as Boomer and Babe and Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is concerned. A second show will be developing, and we have some other shows that Deborah is directly involved in, such as Pathways to Wisdom, and that show will air on Wednesday, tomorrow, for the first show in her series of Pathways to Wisdom shows, and that will be at 2 o'clock Arizona time, which is also at this time of the year, 2 o'clock Pacific, and I believe it makes it at 5 o'clock East Coast. So we encourage you to listen to Deborah's show, Pathways to Wisdom. We've done that show together before, but it's something that's really in her wheelhouse, so I think it'll be enjoyable and have some good information from some great guests. And it is Tuesday, July 31st, 2012, broadcasting from our studios in Sun City, Arizona. I am Pete Peters, as I mentioned. We encourage people to go to Boomer and the Babe Incorporated at boomerandthebabe.com, see everything else that we're involved in, spend a little time, flash through some of the pages as we get the new shows up there on our website as well. My guest today is a lady named Jan Wellborn Nichols. Jan Wellborn Nichols, in her little bio that she sent along, was born in Peculiar, Missouri. And now that she lives in Bloomington, Illinois, she is near to normal. And normal is a town next door. So she went from Peculiar to normal, or thereabouts. And Joanne, welcome to the Boomer the Babe show, the Boomer the Babe on Arizona Boomer Radio.
Thank you, Pete. I'm delighted to be here with you. Nearly normal.
Nearly normal. Very good. I'm glad to have you here. I'm very interested in this topic that we're going to be talking about today. But kind of to get us going, I'm going to ask you for about a two-minute movie, if you will. That's Deborah's term. About your past, your history, whatever you care to tell us, bringing us up to as close as you want to get to what we're going to be talking about. So this is your time to tell us who Jan Wellborn Nichols is.
Well, thank you, Pete. Okay, well, fasten your seatbelt because who knows how bumpy the ride's going to get. I think the main thing I'd love to share with your audience is that when I was growing up as a chubby kid, there just weren't a lot of other kids like me. And sadly, that's not like it is today when, about 12.5 million, and that's about 17% of kids between the ages of 2 and 19 are considered obese, according to the Center for Disease Control. So when I was overweight as a kid, I really felt like a freak, and you know, I was the last kid picked on sports teams, and my grandmother even made my clothes because there weren't many store-bought options for kids my size. And after I survived this, you know, this what sounds like a terrible childhood, compounded by a difficult adolescence of bad skin and ugly glasses, I did find a way through that and found my way to healthy eating and a healthy weight. But that's a story for later in the conversation. But the main thing about me right now is that I want to do something at this stage in my life, I'm now 60, that would help kids make healthier food choices. So I wanted to do something to help address childhood obesity, you know, having been there myself. Well, I'm a writer and a marketer, not a food scientist or a dietitian. So my approach to this was to write a book that's now out in ebook form with print and audio to follow in November of 2012, and that this book would be just a fun adventure that would engage kids, but in addition to the book, we would have a companion website where we would teach kids how to be food detectives. So this is my current mission. I've had a couple of acts of life before this, but Henrietta Sharp, the book and the website are what I'm focused on and what I'm really passionate about right now, as well as everybody's health and taking charge of our own health by taking charge of what we choose to eat.
Well, back in the day, and I don't mean to make you or I sound ancient by doing that. I'm a little bit older than you are, but sometimes I have a tendency of saying back in the day, and people go, how old are you?
Before electricity, when we were.
when it was only dirt. It was a case where when we, myself included, were growing up chubby, childhood obesity wasn't a public health crisis. And I will venture to say that as a rule, there wasn't as much obesity then as there is now. Are those accurate statements?
Yeah, actually, that is quite accurate. The statistical tracking that over the last 20 years or so, it has increased at an alarming rate. The interesting thing in my case, I wonder if this was true for you, is that I grew up on a farm, you know, near a small town, and everything we had was delicious, but it was fried, you know. So in my case, with my metabolism, eating, you know, fried foods, and even the vegetables. Do you remember this? Even the vegetables got a breadcrumb coating and were fried.
Yes.
And I didn't even know that green beans came any other way but in like a mushroom soup casserole with fried onions on the top until
right.
I was about 22. So it's not that our eating habits were so wonderful then, because we didn't have access to as broad a range of fresh fruits and vegetables as we do today, but we were far more active. You know, so by and large, what people ate, it was mitigated by the level of physical activity. But now as we've moved, you know, into the land of convenience foods and the fast food industry restaurants, with less physical activity, it's been a recipe for disaster. So I think they're... What's really different now is that those kinds of foods that are really satisfying to the taste buds are so readily available that we don't have a chance to stop and take charge of what we're eating in terms of, you know, fresher fruits and vegetables, and we're just reacting and consuming what's easily available. We're not being proactive enough in our choices of the truly nourishing foods we could be choosing to eat.
Well, I think what you said with regard to activity is a major point to be made, because when I was young, and we're talking about now, I was born in 47, so that makes me 65 years old.
Mm-hmm.
When I was going to elementary school and junior high school, I was also hiking a couple of miles into the golf course pond in the wintertime to scrape off the pond and shovel off the snow and hockey
yeah.
in Michigan. And we would go down to a vacant lot and we would play football. We would go out into what we called at the time the big woods, have our lunches, try to mow out a field for a baseball diamond. I mean, we did all that kind of stuff, rode our bikes to wherever and back again without any fear. And it was a completely different lifestyle. Now, I kind of misspoke earlier when I said chubby. I'm talking about chubby now. I'm not talking about chubby then. I have passed you going in an opposite direction. I was a skinny little runt. But as we get older sometimes and we get more sedentary, and I sit in front of this console here talking to nice people like yourself 5 days a week, and then I go to networking events and maybe have some cocktails and hors d'oeuvres and whatever else we're going to do. It's very easy to get yourself into a trap of those good-tasting foods. But when we were younger, for the most part, we no more thought of obesity and fat. My dad was big. My dad was big, and it was always a battle with my mother to lose some weight. But nonetheless, we as kids, we were just a bunch of wiry little runts. And we don't see that much anymore, do we?
No, well, there's been a huge change. First of all, is that you and I were free-range kids. You know, I can remember being outdoors and, you know, being told not to really come back until dark. So we had a lot more physical safety, or physical safety was not such an issue. So we were outdoors more, and we didn't have the digital options, the screens or the Xboxes or texting. So that made things very different than the way they are today. But I think one of the exciting things is that we can use this technology to actually reach out to the kids who are looking at screens, and if we can capture their imagination, get them engaged through story, then we can get them interested in you know, finding out cool stuff about the stuff they choose to eat, so that once they're engaged in this, that you know, it may stick just long enough that they even help mom and dad or whoever's pushing the grocery cart make some smarter food choices in the grocery store. And for a lot of our educational focus is on the website, because when you go grocery shopping, you can either make it one of the healthiest experiences of the week, or you can set yourself up for a week of abysmal nutrition and low-level get-up-and-go food.
It's absolutely true. And the other thing that I think that parents nowadays, and I'm talking about my daughter and son-in-law, who at 36 have two children, my granddaughters, 6 and 3, and they have to, they just can't let the kids go run like we used to. So therefore, they have to, if the children are going to be involved in any kind of exercise other than what they may or may not get at school in organized classes and so on, they have to take them somewhere to do something, even if it's go down and spend an hour running around to the parks just so they can unwind, or dance classes, or tumbling classes, or whatever it might be. And they have to instill, which my daughter does, the healthy eating, because she eats what's called on a paleo diet. I'm sure you probably
know. Oh, okay, yes, I'm familiar with that. Yes.
So I'm sure you know what that is. And she goes on that for a while, like a 30-day program, and then she comes off it and does whatever she does, but always with an eye towards what's going in and how much is going in. And she does that with the kids as well. And that's tough nowadays for parents to say to the kids, no, you can't have chicken nuggets every day. You might be able to get them once every 2 weeks as something special.
That's so true. And it's really a challenge to set up the boundaries between get-up-and-go foods versus what you just said, treat foods, because they're just that. You know, everybody wants a treat, whether it's, you know, an Oreo or an ice cream bar, and that's great. But it's about how often you have them and what you're having most of the time in terms of, you know, feeding your heart and your lungs, your bones, your kidneys, and making them happy, not just satisfying your taste buds.
That's right, and that becomes a full-time job in and of itself.
It does. What I hope that we might be able to do is get kids interested enough so that if they're co-shopping with their parents or significant adults, that they will then, you know, take Kitchen Kitty and remember that, oh, cereal, 8 grams of sugar or less. Okay, well, how many grams of sugar are in this box? Oh, my gosh, 13 grams of sugar. That's like 11 teaspoons or something. So we're hoping that we can make it so that instead of kids who might wheedle trying to only get treat foods, that they begin to have a sense of ownership about, you know, I'm not going to be fooled by the box cover. You know, it may have a superhero on it, and it's bright blue and red and orange, but I'm a food detective. I'm going to look at this secret label ingredient and see what's really going on. You know, so we hope that we create, you know, a nation of kids who are well-trained and really get a kick out of being food detectives so they know what they're choosing. You know, you can choose anything, but if you know what you're choosing, you're more likely to choose something that will really feed your whole self.
And I think one of the keys is that it starts young. It's got to start with the kids.
Yeah. Well, you know, ideally, and again, there are some alarming statistics about this, but kids that grow up in a home with where one or more of the parents are overweight are far more likely to grow up and be overweight themselves. But I will point to one exception, and I'm sure there are many, but in my case, you know, I just could not get a handle on the weight thing my whole life. There was a crazy diet out there. I was on it. I don't know if you remember, like, the liquid diet, Metrical and Sego. And I just, if it was a nutty way of eating that was supposed to help you lose weight, then I did it. But what finally did it for me was not a diet. It started with an emotional shift. And when we were chatting before the show, I told you that I didn't really get to a healthy weight and keep that weight until I was almost 47. And I was at a hotel room on a business trip in Chicago, and I was so uncomfortable, you know, like my trousers were tight and my skin felt like a sausage casing, and I just could not have been, you know, more miserable physically or the way I felt in my clothes. And I just said, okay, this is it. But, you know, my life is happening right now, right this minute, and I'm not going to defer feeling happy or feeling good until that day when I can manage to lose weight and get healthy. I'm going to start right now appreciating me exactly where I am, exactly as I am, and then I'm going to work toward feeling the way I want to feel, so that I can be so easy with who I am that I can pay attention to other people, you know, so that I can meet someone and just think about them instead of thinking, oh, I wonder what they're thinking about me because of the way I look. So so it can happen in later in life. It's, you know, you can change anything about yourself. You can change your eating habits at any time when, you know, just when you're ready to do that. And when it's preceded by an emotional shift, whether it's the doctor telling you, you know, you have to because of your health, or you've just reached a bottoming out point, then, you know, then whether you're 16 or 65, you can do it. It can be done. Talking to the proof.
There you go. I know what just for the continue this discussion about dealing with the kids, because I think that's kind of where we're going to be hanging for a while. I know for a fact, as an example, that my daughter will not let the girls have not had, to my knowledge, a candy bar. They have had on occasion one or two or no more than five M&Ms. That's it. And they get them because they're making a game of whatever, and they're getting an M&M. The other thing is they both like Cheetos, but they don't get to go in hand and fist to go get the whole bag of Cheetos, We had them all. We're here for lunch. I bought a couple of small bags of Cheetos, and they had probably 6 or 7 Cheetos in a bowl each, and that's all they had, and that's all they wanted. That's the way it's been introduced to them. They drink soy milk, as an example. They eat cheese. They eat fresh vegetables, carrots, celery, whatever, maybe with a little peanut butter on the celery, and that's the way they eat. And I'm just so proud of her because these kids eat good stuff. I mean, just really good stuff. They get a pizza, it's a treat. And they get the pizza they get the pizza when they come to Grandma and Grandpa's house.
The underminers of good nutrition, grandparents.
Just the other
day. That's not true. Pizza is a treat, or you know, you can do healthier versions of pizza with Canadian bacon or lots of veggies and have a piece or two with a salad, and that's terrific. You know, there's no bad foods that way, but that is wonderful, and it's so great when you start kids out from the get-go. You know, but it's difficult to make a change if you haven't done that. But, you know, in spite of all the influences that there are on children's lives, whether it's school or friends or their church, that the biggest influence is still the parents. And so if parents are modeling good, healthy habits, kids are going to tend to model that behavior. So that's obviously happening in your daughter's household, and that's a really wonderful thing. Yeah.
Well, it is a wonderful thing. I mean, even to the point of if my son-in-law always used to drink Diet Coke, and he himself has come off the Diet Coke, and he's just said, because I know it's not good, so he doesn't. And if my daughter has Coke or Pepsi, a glass every now and then, they have, it's a mommy drink. It's a daddy drink. It's not for kids. The kids can go in. If you want to have a soda, you can split a can of Hansen's orange soda or whatever the case might be.
Yeah, there you go. Again, moderation. And one of the characters that I've introduced is called Big Mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Mouth doesn't acknowledge portions, you know, he just eats, and has kind of this open maw. And so setting boundaries with portions is such an important thing. And, you know, again, coming back to my lack of knowledge at one time, if someone had told me that an ounce of cheese was a serving size, I'd go, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You know, or 1 ounce, about what fits, you know, in the palm of your hand, is a serving of potato chips. It's like, go on, get out of here. So
half that bag's got to be gone when I get done with it.
Yeah.
or it's not a successful adventure.
So true, you know. But one of the great things is that we've developed such a guilt, angst-ridden relationship with food. You know, we're bad if we're eating non-nutritional foods, and we're deprived if we're not having them. And I really would like to see people engaging in a full range of, you know, of food and delighting in it. And that, you know, a pasta doesn't have to be drowning in white sauce, you know, to be wonderful with the light olive oil and tomato. I mean, don't get me talking about food, because I love food. I love everything about it. I love talking about it and cooking, but it's learning what those, you know, sort of healthy versions of great food are, and then just incorporating them into your life. So there's no deprivation, and then there's just a choice that, yeah, right now I really want a treat. Okay, I'm going to have that and enjoy it, you know? I'm going to enjoy what I treat myself to.
No doubt about it. After trying all your life to lose the weight, what was it I'm assuming a light went off somewhere, somehow? Is that safe to say?
Yes, yes. It was a bottoming out feeling. I'm sorry, I was interrupting you.
No, I was just asking, what was it that flip the switch?
I think it was just an emotional low. I had just finally had it, you know, with feeling bad in every way, with feeling bad emotionally because I didn't like the way I looked, with feeling bad about my energy level, my lack of ease in just being in my own body, and I was ready to change. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but the mindset of saying from this point on, emotionally, I accept who I am, but I'm on the way to becoming the person I want to be. And that small shift in attitude allowed me to really embrace and sustain making some lifestyle changes, which were, you know, simply doing the things that you and I have been talking about, you know, looking at portions, choosing, you know, lower fat, you know, a lot less sugar, and just doing the things that we all know to do, but doing them every day, day after day, and then, you know, doing mild, consistent exercise. So there was nothing radical. This wasn't like The Biggest Loser on TV. There was, you know, nothing extraordinary, except that it was extraordinary about how the weight just kind of melted away without starving or eating weird stuff or eating a limited diet. So I'm a better cook now than I ever was before. And, you know, it's because I experiment with all kinds of ways of cooking and cooking with spices and, you know, going for the zesty delicious without the sugar, fat, and salt, which plague so much of our prepackaged and restaurant industry foods. So that was it, an emotional shift and a change in lifestyle consistent over time.
I was interested in what you were saying about cooking and that you experiment with this and different spices and so on and so forth, eliminating some of the baddies, the sugars and the mm-hmm. salt and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth.
Yeah.
How much more difficult is it to cook healthy than it is to cook the way we always cook by throwing some barbecue sauce on it or smothering it in some soy or teriyaki and letting it marinate?
I think it's just as easy. But I suppose that there's one thing that you have to do is that you end up chopping more vegetables, okay? And if there's any more work involved, that's really it, you know. But you can share that with someone in your household, if you like, and cooking can become more communal. But as for the other, you know, it's very easy to replace a high sugar, a high salt marinade. And sadly, most of them do have both of those things in them, with something homemade. One that I like to use for oriental flavoring is like a tablespoon of sesame oil to 3 tablespoons of light soy sauce with 1 spoonful of sugar whipped up, and throw that over and make, you know, use it to make sauteed rice or put it over a big wok full of vegetables. And so you're not getting the high sugar or high sodium that you get from marinades. And the calories always hide in those sneaky places. You know, like if you're a Miracle Whip or mayonnaise lover, you know, beware. You're adding calories there. So, you know, use with caution. Use ketchup with caution unless you're using a reduced sugar version. So it's condiments. Much like salad, side salad things like croutons, many of the calories just kind of sneak into our lives, the empty calories, from those things that we don't really think about. They kind of become invisible. So one step of wanting to change how you eat is to become very aware of everything that you do eat for a while so that you can identify where those calories are going. But is it more difficult? No, I think it's just as easy. And Now, I suppose I should mention at this point that I became a vegetarian. That wasn't really tied to weight loss, but I had flirted with vegetarianism since I was about 18 when I had read a book called Diet for a Small Planet by Francis Moore LePage. And it was focused on sustainability, the ability to feed even more people in the world by eating a vegetable and grain-based diet. So when I committed to this lifestyle change at 47, I went back to being a vegetarian full-time and have stuck with it ever since. And so for me, that's part of the way I eat, but I do not believe that that's necessary for weight loss if that's not an individual's personal choice.
Sure. Well, I tell you what, we're going to take a break here for a couple of announcements, and when we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit more about your vegetarianism and how that has helped you to sustain your weight and how fast the change it took for the change to take place. And I also want to talk about Henrietta Sharp and the magic lunchbox a little bit more
in detail.
So we'll be back after these few words. And so enjoy the messages, everybody, and we'll be back shortly.
Boomer the Babe are the publishers of Boomer Series books. Our authors have their own shows on the Boomer the Babe Network. We encourage you to listen. Ron Naraki, author of the forthcoming book, The Ten Commandments of Investing, is the host of Wealth DNA, a financial show about real estate investment. Learn how to build and manage your portfolio. Ron hosts the show, and he always has good information to pass along, as do his guests. Listen to Wealth DNA on the second and fourth Monday of the month at 8 a.m. Arizona time. Tom Liggering's another Boomer Series author. His book, Success or Failure, The Choice is Yours, is the basis of the show he does with his broadcast partner, Dr. Terry Munther. Listen to Success or Failure with Tom and Terry on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 a.m. Arizona time. Learn how you can maximize your performance in business and in life. The methods you employ can either help or hinder. The choice is yours. The Boomer and the Babe are proud to be affiliated with Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free. Valley View is now serving Phoenix from their new 36,000 square foot location at West Peoria and 107th Avenue in Sun City, Arizona. The new location houses the food bank, Feeding Arizona, and the Valley View Thrift Store. Feeding Arizona delivers food to other food banks and food pantries that are in need. If you're looking for a 501c3 to support, go to valleyviewcommunityfoodbank.com. All donations are welcome, be it food, money, or volunteer hours. No donation is too small. Get a hold of Jesse Ramirez, founder and director, and say, I want to help. Valley View Community Food Bank, where the food is always free.
And we're back. This is Arizona Boomer Radio with the Boomer and the Babe, and we're talking to Jan Wellborn Nichols, who was born in Peculiar, Missouri, and now she lives in Bloomington, Illinois, and she is near to normal. And we're glad to have. I can't stop saying that, Jan. That's just hilarious.
Like I said, Pete, you can't make that stuff up.
That is one of the best openings on a bio I have ever read, and I read a lot of them, believe me.
Thank you very much, sir.
I appreciate that. We were talking about the fact that you have become a vegetarian, and you've been a vegetarian since, I think you said, 47.
My question
to you is, I think we pretty well discussed what put it over the edge that you wanted to try vegetarianism, but were you able to commit to it very quickly, or is it something that became an acquired taste, if you will, and then did that help to facilitate your weight loss, and how quickly did the weight loss take place?
Okay. Well, I had toyed with being a vegetarian since I was about 18, which is, as I mentioned earlier, when I'd read Diet for a Small Planet by Francis Moore LePage. So I had been a vegetarian off and on for you know, for much of my younger life. But again, when I had this shift and wanted to make a life change at 47, I wanted to go back to vegetarianism. And the reason is it just sort of aligns with my belief system that it's both a cleaner way to eat, it's easier to digest, and just on a personal level, having grown up on a farm, I knew where those animals went when they left the farm, and that bothered me. So I think, you know, so unlike many people who can disassociate where their food was coming from, I could no longer do that. And so I was motivated, you know, more for those personal reasons than for weight loss reasons. But as it turns out, it was very easy for me to make the transition. I did not miss meat at all, or chicken or fish. In fact, my general rule is that if it has a face, I don't eat it. So that keeps it kind of simple. And so there was just no problem for me going back to something I'd already experimented with. Now, if people are new to that idea, it really is important to embrace a wide variety of vegetables in a vegetarian diet, you know, from dark leafy green to reds like peppers and beets, and to get yourself introduced to beans and legumes, lentils, because those are an important part of your diet. They're a mainstay. And the other thing is to eat whole grains, or even unsprouted grains. And so you put all those together, and you get all of the essential nutrients and amino acids, you know, that you need, and you can be, you know, healthy and thrive as a vegetarian. But, you know, vegetarianism and veganism, which is where you don't eat any dairy or eggs, is, you know, there's a lot of press or many articles about you don't get enough protein. It really isn't true. You know, there are other things that, like, say, soy isn't good for you and can cause health problems. Again, not true. If you eat anything to excess, I'm sure at some point it could poison you, you know, if you just ate it in an uncontrolled manner. But everything about a vegetarian diet really appeals to me and was very easy to incorporate.
Well, that things, everything in moderation kind of a mantra probably works in some cases. I mean,
there you go.
How long ago was it? It wasn't that long ago because I can remember it, when they were saying that sweet and low was absolutely abhorrent and it was going to kill you, and it you know, killed lab rats and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and when you translate it out, how much sweet and low, or the whatever that substance is that they were eating. It's saccharin.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
When you discovered how much they were eating huge, copious quantities that a human couldn't even consume, and no wonder they died, for crying out loud.
That's so true. And, you know, the controversy is still really big about whether it's, you know, you should use pink packets or yellow packets or sugar or a natural substitute like stevia. And it's, again, in moderation, if some use of those really helps you get off sugar, which is high in empty calories, then I think it's okay. And not that my opinion matters, but I read that dietitians and people who are food scientists say that moderation is the key. So their use in moderation is just fine.
When you mentioned that you don't eat anything with a face, it brought to memory. We were out having dinner many years ago with some friends of ours, and a fellow was there that was a friend of mine from my childhood, and also the brother of the fellow that was in the couple that we were with. And he's a vegetarian. He's a vegan, I guess. And he said, he explained that he doesn't eat anything with a face. And he excused himself and left the table. And when he came back, on his plate, Deborah had placed, with various vegetables and whatever else, a face. She had put a face on his plate.
That was just mean, but very funny, too. Yeah.
And she said, "Now, John, are you going to eat that?"
Well, I hope he did. I have a funny related story somewhat similar to that. We were taken out to dinner at a very fine steakhouse, and so I knew I was going to be eating broccoli and a baked potato. But what I didn't know was that they brought out like the various cuts of meat on a platter so that people who were eating steak could choose it. And they also brought out a live lobster with his legs banded so you could, see the lobster you were going to get if that's what you ordered. And I just wanted to take that lobster and cut the bands off and, turn them loose in the restaurant. I'm like, run, buddy, run. So that was my face moment in a steakhouse. So,
there you go. There you go. Let's talk about your book, the one that you wrote for the children about being content aware. In the grocery store.
Okay.
Henrietta Sharp and the Magic Luggage Box. Tell us a little about that.
Okay. Henrietta Sharp and the Magic Lunchbox is the story of the 12-year-old Henry, otherwise Henrietta, and her journey. She's a chubby 12-year-old who deals with mean girls at school, a brand new unruly superpower, and an intergalactic villain who wants to take over the taste buds of humanity. So this is her adventure with her two best friends, and the other world they have to travel to help rescue a leader of the fake food rebellion and their role in defeating the ultimate villain who wants to enslave humanity by addicting them to a deadly substance called sucranose. Kind of sounds like sugar, doesn't it? So anyway, so it's a kid's adventure. Some of the good guys in the book are like Sir Brock Lee and Macaulay Flower. Both come from a vegetable race of people. But it's just kind of a good old-fashioned time travel, kids saving the world kind of adventure, focusing on the importance of accepting yourself and self-confidence, friendship, loyalty, and doing the right thing even when it's the hard thing. So that's book one in what I hope will be a series that's available at all ebook stores right now. And I mentioned earlier that a print and audio version will be out in November of 2012 so that we can make the holiday shopping season. So while the book is my great passion, and I labored over it for 5 years, nights and weekends, to make that happen. The other passion is the companion website, HenriettaSharp.com, which is where we want to build off the characters in the story into what I mentioned earlier, into introducing this imagination into nutrition and to present nutrition information to kids and their significant adults in a way that engages them, that wants to get them involved in learning this cool secret stuff about the stuff they're actually choosing to eat. So that's what I'm really excited about, and that's the current life-consuming project at the moment.
That is really cool. Now, you said that right now that it's in ebook form. Is that correct?
Yes, you can get it. At Amazon for the Kindle, or for Barnes and Noble's Nook, or at the iPad store, or the Sony Reader. And then it's available on some other sites that are less known to the general public, like Kobo, KOBO.com, is an open source e-reader. It's also available there. Then coming in the fall, the other two versions will be out. And if your listeners are so inclined, the first 15 minutes of the audio are posted on the website, and I'm working with a wonderful producer named Tara Tyler, and she has just got it nailed. She's doing a great production of the audio version.
Well, that sounds interesting. I wrote those down because I'm going to tell my daughter about them, and maybe it's something that she can pull down for her.
Oh, that's terrific.
Her 6-year-old is a voracious reader. So they went to the Grand Canyon this weekend. The youngest one, 3, was climbing on the rocks and was looking at the sunset and said, "Daddy, that's really pretty." The 6-year-old wants to know how it works.
That's a full-time job.
It really is. Yeah, trust me. I know when we have it for a weekend, it is a full-time job.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Okay, indeed. Now let's talk about what kind of advice you can give to people. If they want to start making healthier food choices, what do you advise them? How can it become more successful for them so they don't get frustrated and just say, "Oh, to heck with it"?
Cool. Okay, I'm just going to recommend 2 different approaches. One is if you are just ready to, like, sweep the cupboards clean and restock your pantry and just, you know, get the junk food out of the house. A great resource is one of my friends and a dietitian. Her name is Zanya Foco. And if you go to her website, Zanya, Zonya.com, she has great tips. She has a bunch of products that I receive no monetary payment for saying this, that her cookbook, Lickety Split Meals, will show you how to, they'll give you a grocery shopping list, show you what you need to have in your pantry, plus loads and loads of healthy, easy recipes. So Zonya.com is a great resource when you're ready to clear the decks and just make a big change. Now, if that just seems too overwhelming and you just want to start taking some steps toward healthier eating, one of them is to replace your high-calorie love food. For me, that was kettle potato chips. I love kettle-style potato chips. And replace it with a lower-calorie option. So for me, that's air pop popcorn with Parmesan cheese on the top. You know, if you're so whatever your high calorie go to food is, come up with a lower calorie option. The second thing that you can do is don't take anything out of your diet. You know, don't go down the path of deprivation or I can't give up my Haagen-Dazs or my whatever kind of ice cream you might love, but introduce healthy foods. If you don't have a fruit bowl on your kitchen counter, start getting it in there. Get apples and bananas and get grapes and have them out there in front of you and make a pact that you will eat at least 1 or 2 servings of fruit a day. And by the way, a serving is only a half a cup. So if you just put half a banana on your morning cereal and have some apple slices, with your lunch snack, you've already made a huge improvement. And the other thing that is great is if you need help, like, organizing yourself to cook, Aviva Goldfarb does a wonderful job of outlining easy meals for busy moms and dads, and her website is called the6oclockscramble.com. So I highly recommend her. And then one of the cool things that you've always heard, the one about eat breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a great thing. And you should eat breakfast. And if you can't stand to eat breakfast first thing, pack something and take it with you. But here's the opposite of that. You can increase your ability to lose weight by getting more sleep. There are scientific studies out on this that when you're fatigued, you eat more. And you're not as selective about what you eat because you're grasping for an energy source. So, you sleep and enhance your ability to lose weight. Sleep, weight loss, that's a win-win. Start that today.
Right. And the other thing that is interesting is that people eat because they're stressed.
So
if you're a stress eater, then you've got to do whatever it takes to kind of alleviate some of that stress problem, and hopefully then that'll become easier to stay away from various snacks and so forth.
Yeah, and that really comes back to an awareness issue of what am I eating? You know, that's, you know, some people find it very helpful to keep like a food diary for a couple of weeks so that you just, you really see like, oh man, I ate 3 donuts at work, you know, or whatever, just to wake up to the fact of what's actually going in your mouth. So it can be illuminating. And I think the other thing, too, is don't wait until you're starved to eat. I find that it really helps to eat something every 2 to 3 hours, you know. And much as you mentioned, what's going on in your daughter's household, you know, some celery with peanut butter, apple slices and a tablespoon of peanut butter, skim mozzarella, cheese sticks, and a cupful of grapes, you know. So if you wait, especially all day when you're burning the most calories and you don't eat till nighttime because you want to lose weight, well, you're just doing yourself in because you're starved, you're tired, you're just going to eat indiscriminately and eat far longer than you need to because you can't tell when you're full.
Sure. What does exercise play? What role does exercise play in this, do you think?
Well, it's an important component. And as we get older, we need to keep moving, you know. A friend of mine asked me, like, you know, if your muscles are kind of sore after you run, why do you keep running? And I said, well, because they're, when I don't run, they're just stiff and sore. When I run, they're just a little stiff. So I'd much rather get out and keep moving and feel more vital. But I think, too, the thing, like, the Olympics are going on right now, and it's really interesting to be, we're so inspired by the caliber of these remarkable, you know, men and women. But it's important to remember that small, consistent exercise makes a huge difference. So don't feel that you have to do, you know, a whole lot to really turn your life around. Like, I exercise really consistently, cardio 4 or 5 times a week, but, you know, I'll ride my bike for an hour, or I'll run for 30 to 45 minutes slowly, you know. But walking half hour is a great thing to do. Just keep moving. And then strength training is important, too. And I happen to like doing Pilates on a machine, the Pilates reformer for strength training, because it feels like your muscles are lengthened. Like when you do free weights, they feel kind of cramped, and you know, I'm not sure. I just don't like the feeling quite as well with free weights. But it, again, whatever level you can do and wherever you start, it will only make your life better. It improves your mood. It helps you think more clearly. Walking is a great way to problem solve. You know, you spend way less on therapy if you walk more. It's just a win-win.
Well, I enjoy myself. I enjoy doing 12-ounce curls with my very good friend, Bud Weiser.
Cool. Okay, I fell for that one. Yes.
He's a wonderful companion. And he never complains.
I've heard that he's congenial. I will give you that.
Yeah. That's about all he is. Well, Jan, we're down here to the short rows. We're going to have to probably wrap this up here. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. I look forward to talking to you again. I'll give you a call after I check off the show. And we'll... have a few other things that we could talk about off air. So again, any information, any contact information that you want to give, this is your chance for a shameless self-promotion.
Okay. Well, if anyone would like to know more about the book, Henrietta Sharp and the Magic Lunchbox, you can go to the website, henriettasharp.com, or you can simply go straight to amazon.com and just type the title in. And if you want to contact me directly, please feel free to do so, Jan, at henriettasharp.com. And Pete, thank you so much for the chance to be your guest today. It's been a blast.
It's been a real pleasure for me as well. Look forward to talking to you again real soon. And
okay.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you, Pete. You too.
Take care now. And this has been the Boomer the Babe on Arizona Boomer Radio with our special guest Jan Wellborn Nichols, born in Peculiar, Missouri, and now she lives in Bloomington, Illinois, and she is near to normal. And I had to say it one more time before I had left the air. So contact her with regard to Henrietta Sharp and the Magic Lunchbox at henriettasharp.com, or you could Google it. You can look it up on Amazon. It's available in an ebook. Sounds like it's a great book to give to your kids, and they can start being very wise and making great choices as far as their consumption of food is concerned, and teach them to read labels and what to look for. And it sounds like it's presented in a very, very friendly way, and so something that they will enjoy. So I recommend that. Once again, we'll be back tomorrow with our Exploring Faith show at 10 o'clock in the morning, Arizona time. We'll be back with John Mayer. He's going to get a guest in here, I do believe, and we'll have some more discussion about what faith does with people and what people do with faith. So we look forward to that. Have a great day, everybody, and we look forward to having you back listening to us again tomorrow. Take care.
You've been listening to Arizona Boomer Radio with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Arizona Boomer Radio is produced by the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated and can be heard Monday through Friday. You can sign up for their online magazine at boomerandthebabe.com. To reach the Boomer and the Babe, email host@boomerandthebabe.com or friend them on facebook.com/boomerandbabe. And on Blog Talk, you can friend them at blogtalkradio.com/boomerandbabe. Follow their tweets at twitter.com/boomerandbabe. Be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And remember, at 50, you're just getting started.